basically we're coming off a super cycle that basically lasted 10 years. And it started in 2002, 2012. And what's real interesting, Bob, it really benefited the grain industry. And the super cycle was created by the strong economies, particularly the emerging nations, the biofuels and the ethanol, and our Federal Reserve basically kept the value of the dollar down and interest rates low. And, of course, Mother Nature cooperated in there. And so it gave the best of times, particularly for the grain industry. Now, the grain industry is starting to get re-entrenched, and the best of times are over in the livestock industry.
One of the comments you made was that you need a vital livestock industry for the grain industry to succeed.
Absolutely. And here's what happened during that super cycle. Things heated up so much abroad, the demand, and we forgot the importance of our livestock industry here in the United States. And so to balance it out, an economically viable livestock industry, whether it's beef, dairy, hog, poultry, is very, very critical for long-term sustainability in the grain industry.
Right now we're looking at a global economy that's backed off on export demand. Short-term or longer-term?
I think this might be a little bit longer-term. And one of the things that's happening is you can see the emerging nations, such as China and Brazil and India, their growth rates have dropped in half. And one of the things is they're trying to reignite the growth. But I think one of the things that you're seeing globally is this synchronized slowdown. So we may be in here for, you know, a 3 or 4 year type of period. And again, it's just natural because economies go through cycles. They were hot for unprecedented 10 to 15 years. And so now they're into that re-entrenchment. And it's impacting all commodities, all the way from oil to steel to copper, corn, beans, and wheat, and milk.
Oil is the big thing that's been a factor that's taken everyone by surprise here. Where to from here for this?
I don't know. It's really right. I could see oil coming because you could see these emerging nations slowing down. $60 barrel oil doesn't bother me, but oil in the $30, $40 barrel range, I have some concerns because one of the things is the investment that's been made into the, you know, shale fields in North Dakota and over in Pennsylvania and Ohio, it's not quite as economically viable. But another thing that's really driving oil price down, nobody talks about, is we're much more efficient through technology to be able to get this oil out of the ground, you know, at a cheaper rate. And so $30 to $40 barrel oil could mean that the pendulum might swing back to 120. So I think any agriculture producer needs to have an energy plan.
You mentioned technology is going to be an ever-increasing factor.
No doubt about it. And you can really see it picking up, whether it's oil, whether it's agriculture. And what it's really doing is we're able to produce so much more at such a lower cost. And you know what? The other thing that's going to be a challenge for American agriculture is finding the talent to be able to efficiently operate the technology and the innovation that's coming out there. And so I call it the talent wars that are going to come in rural America to be able to find the highly qualified people to operate the equipment. But there's no doubt that technology is actually creating a deflationary environment around the world.
You also mentioned you have seen more young people at agricultural sessions than you've ever seen before.
It's amazing. Look at this one here today. You know, it was well over half of the group that was under 42 years of age. And again, I'm not demeaning USDA statistics that says agriculture is getting older, but the people that are the movers and the shakers that are attending these lifelong learning events, definitely we're seeing 50, 60, 70% of the group is these young people. And that they're bringing a whole new set of energy, a whole new mindset. And it's very, very exciting to see that. But these millennials, 18 to 34, are going to face their first economic punch, and it's going to be interesting to see how resilient they're going to be.
Are you seeing people, young people from outside agriculture coming into the industry?
Oh, absolutely. And matter of fact, it's real interesting in my travels. We'll see kids that didn't grow up on the farm. They're coming back in. And oftentimes they're very, very good because they haven't been ingrained in old ways. No, another thing that I'm seeing people who were professionals, whether it's doctors, lawyers, different things, they're coming back into agriculture, and they can operate these businesses because of technology. So I'm starting to see an influx of that outside thinking coming in the ag arena.
Are we seeing many more multi-generational farms? It used to be just the farmer farmed their own, and when the young one came on, they started their own farm.
Well, it's real interesting. We are seeing multiple generations, but how that's changed now, instead of brothers operating farms together, it might be brother, sister, but cousins. Cousins is a big thing, because as these farms have got bigger, it's cousins operating with cousins, so it requires more formality in the business arrangements now than we had, you know, 10, 15 years ago, because cousins have spouses and they all have to get along. So that's a major trend that I'm seeing. Cousins are now operating the businesses. And it's interesting, 21% of American farms and ranches have no next generation. And literally last week I had older producers at some of my educational events trying to identify young people that they might want to join up with. And it's interesting. I call it the super scouting combine now out here. And that's kind of refreshing.
Is this something, is the agricultural lender in a position to help that non-traditional farmer get started?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And one of the things that we're finding is, whether it's Farm Credit, FSA, or the banks out here, they can be a very important position, not only in extending the money, but providing coaching and you know, facilitation of various programs that they could put together to make a successful financial and business management package. Lender plays a big role, and that's why I enjoy working and training lenders, because I know they're going to be very, very critical with this generation.
Looking to the future, you said key is to surround yourself with good people.
Oh, absolutely. And you know, a lot of people in agriculture say, well, I can't afford, you know, the price of good people. Well, you can sure overpay a poor one, but not. And oftentimes it's more than pay. Sometimes it's working arrangements and different things like this. And so one of the things that I find is I tell any young person, surround yourself with good suppliers, good lenders, good employees, good family members, and they'll just raise the level. And you look at successful athletic teams, they have good people around them.
Let's touch on dairy for a moment here. Of course, we had a record year last year. We've seen a downturn in dairy prices, significant downturn. And yet, in general, everyone's saying they're in shape to withstand 1 year of this.
Yeah, you know, it's really interesting as I look, and of course, I follow you guys very, very closely. The one thing that's different than 2009, some of our costs are coming off, whether it be the fuel cost, the feed cost. Problem is, feed costs aren't quite coming off as fast as we'd like them to be, but it's a little bit different than 2009. And some of the good dairymen got their balance sheets in order, kind of cleaned up, you know, some of the open accounts. So they should be able to, you know, weather, you know, the 1 year, you know, kind of reset. But the other thing is, even in the dairy industry now, I'm finding that those managers are stepping up. They know their cost. They know some of the metrics. And they're tying their production to their marketing plan, to their, you know, financial plan. And so I'm cautiously optimistic for the dairy industry as well.
You touched on exports, and that the American agriculture, and dairy is a prime example, built up for the export market, and then all of a sudden China pulls out. Exports are always going to be volatile.
Yeah, and this is the thing that we've got to realize. Those markets can be giveneth, and they can be takeneth away. And this is why, as an agriculture producer, the key thing now is to have liquidity on your balance sheet to be able to withstand these wide swings in volatility. Know your costs. Don't put all your eggs in one basket in a marketing and risk management plan. So it's changed the dynamics of managing the business. And you got to keep in mind, while U.S. agriculture is still pretty strong, we aren't the 800-pound gorilla that we used to be. And a lot, you know, 94% of our customers are foreign customers. And so those markets can be given, taken away. So the whole thing is, don't bet the long-term future just on, you know, a market in a given country, et cetera, et cetera.
And have a risk management plan.
Oh, definitely. Risk management, is so important. And part of a risk management plan is to have a financial liquidity plan to be able to be resilient, but then still be agile. Remember, cash may not earn you much in the bank, but where it does earn you is you don't have to sell your assets at a discounted value, and you buy other people's assets at a discounted value.
And your final comment was, be better before you get bigger.
Oh, absolutely. You know, a lot of people try to grow their way to profits. Get efficient before you get bigger. Better is better before bigger is better, because you can get bigger, and if you aren't efficient, your losses just get bigger. Yeah, and so I'm a big believer, better is better before bigger is better.